the end of Nitzavim and Vayelech. So this is our first double parsha of the year. So the veterans know a few things about our style here. One is that you could ask, so if it's a double parsha, what do you do about Shvi? Do you do, or any given aliyah, whatever aliyah it is, do you do the doubled aliyah, or do you do that one of each parsha? So if you think about it for a second, you realize you have to do that one from each parsha, because otherwise, from one year to the next, you're not going to have any consistency. So we do Shvi of Nitzavim and Shvi of Vayelech today on our agenda. And the other thing the veterans know is that we always look for synergy, and there's tremendous synergy here. Not necessarily a little bit with the Masechta, not necessarily that much, but it's always fascinating just how much the parshios tend to correspond with the time of year. And it's very much the case with Nitzavim, Vayelech, all these parshios which focus us on themes of tshuva and grand Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur themes really seem perfectly poised to lead us right into the path we need to for the Yom Noraim. And there's a third point of synergy, which I don't know how to explain, but this is something we've also noticed in the past few years, that very often there are similar themes that show up in the proportional, the corresponding aliyahs from one week to the next. So here especially, you'll see that we'll talk about Shvi of Nitzavim. We'll find some parallels to Shvi of Kisavo that we spoke about last week. We'll find some repeating themes that seem to recognize their shared aliyah placement. It's always a little interesting. So that's going to happen a couple of times today. So with that, let's take a look first at Nitzavim, which very much is written for Erev Rosh Hashanah. This is the theme. There's no question. It goes, speaks directly to us at this time of year, where the Torah says, pretty directly, Re'ei nosati lufanecha hayom es hachayim v'es hatov. Yes, I'm of this. Yes, right, I have put before you the choice. I've given you either the good in life or the less good, to put it euphemistically, and the less lively, to put it euphemistically. So you have the choice. So here, this is a theme that we are familiar with, and this idea that I have placed them both in front of you. So first, Rashi has a comment over here, which is interesting, because you have to figure out how to read it. Rashi says, it seems rather straightforward, but if you think about it, it's a little bit challenging. Rashi says, Zeh toli bazeh. Im tase tov, harei lecha chayim. Everything is contingent on itself, on the other matters, that if you do that which is good, then you'll have life. Im tase ra, harei lecha mavis. You're going to do bad, then it's not going to work out as well. V'akos mefarish v'holecheich. And the psukim will go on to continue this theme. So that seems intuitive, but it's also out of order then, right? So shouldn't it be es hatov yes achayim? When you do good, then you get life, and not the other way around, achayim v'atov. And rav es amavis it should be. So the Kli Yakar suggests, to address that point, that the Torah is trying to be merames here, that our perspective should be not that we are doing the good so that we shall get a long life, but we should think the other way around, that we want a long life and we want substantive existence so that we can accomplish within that. So therefore the Torah is being merames that by saying it in a way that looks backwards, that you should have hachayim so that you can do tov, and otherwise, God forbid, it could be the opposite. The Rambam in Hilchos Tshuva, again, this really could not be more timely. The Rambam in Hilchos Tshuva in Perek Vav, Halacha Gimel, so he refers to this pasuk, among others, as the Iker Gadol, as one of the main reflections in the Torah of the major principle that we have Bechira Chafshis. He goes on to say there that one has to understand, this is a crucial axiom of Jewish philosophy, that it is up to you. That it's your choice who you want to be, and God did not decide that you were going to be a Rasha or a Tzaddik. He gave you the kochos to choose the path. And he quotes this pasuk to make that point. Now, it's interesting that he doesn't pick the more obvious pasuk, which is also in this aliyah coming up, which we'll talk about more, Abu Bakharto Bechayim, which seems to also make that point and actually uses the word Bechira, which is the word that we use when we talk about Bechira Chavshis. We talk about free will, we use that word Bechira. So one would have thought that that would be a pasuk that would be good to quote for this. So there's an interesting essay, which I'll recommend you read. I can't necessarily do it justice because it's a little bit confusing, but Rav Gifter, the Telzer Rosh Yeshiva, in the Sefer Pirkei Torah, so he addresses this point, and he notes, the language a little bit shifts back and forth, which is why I don't want to misrepresent what he says, but he basically makes the point that there's different levels of choice in this world, and that we have to pay attention to all of them, that we could think that we're selecting, that we're choosing, at times when we're really not, because our environment and our context and the decisions that we've already made have brought us to a place where we're not really in control. And the Torah is addressing and telling us that we have to try to recognize that theoretically, and we have to make it actual, that we have free choice on many different levels, that we can choose the context in which we place ourselves, we can choose the patterns that we reinforce, and the decisions that we make that put a grand theme to everything that we do. And that's also a part of Bechira. And sometimes that means taking spiritually oriented steps, and here's some of that synergy I was talking about, said that last week's Shvi of Kisavo, where Moshe says to the Jewish people that HaKadosh Baruch Hu didn't give you a Lev Ladas, and synergy that was also a Sefer that we quoted this week, that counts. So that's also a reflection of the fact, we discussed this last week, right? The idea that we're supposed to ask God to help us with that. And the whole question we talked about last week about praying for Ruchnius, and to what extent is that concept, even if we say Kol Bidei Shemayim, Chutz Meira Shemayim. So it's all one package, as we've got to discuss this in this essay, that we want to do the right thing, we want to choose to do the right thing, what's in front of us, and we want to have everything else support that decision and their future decisions. So therefore, we want to be in a context where we have influences that will help us, we want to be imbued with a spirit that will make us want to choose things like this. So we look for every little bit of help we can get, and we ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu, yes, you should help us out, please instill within us such a spirit and put us in the context where it's easier, and all of that, that's all a part of the Bechira process, and that's the theme that the Rambam is emphasizing here. The Lutzker Rav, and there's Nayan Latar,
the difference between those Plikim is,
so that's why I said his language is a little confusing, because to nail down exactly when he uses the word Bechira and when he uses the word just in general, of your ability to follow one path or the other, or why one pasuk is more one the other, I think that's not fully fleshed out so clearly, and that's why I'm kind of downplaying that part of it. But the part that he emphasizes two different themes there, that there is the actual decision you make in the moment, and there is the context, that continues to be an important point, and it's worth reading just to see the further discussion of that. Along similar lines, there's Naim Latorah, the Lutzker Rav, in his comment on this pasuk. So he notes that everybody is made up of physicality and spirituality, of Ruchnius and Gashmius. So theoretically, we have equal measures of each. So then, okay, it's all laid out there. It's 50-50. We should be able to choose. It's open. It's a fair fight because everything's equal. But, say, it's not such a fair fight. What do you mean? We live in a physical world, right? We live in a world that is a world of Gashmius, and we have all of the needs of living in a physical world. So therefore, doesn't that tip the balance tremendously? Doesn't that make it much harder to strive for a spiritual existence when the context in which you are doing the striving is tilted towards the Gashmius, is by its very nature material? So to that, he comments, he says, that's the context here in these psukim. It means that's where the Torah provides the other half of the balance. That yes, we exist within a physical structure, but we do so with a spiritual context of the Torah. So that kind of evens things out. So now it's back to being a fair fight. Now it's back to being 50-50. So it's up to us to choose the spiritual existence. And that's the message here. In the Sefer Yudim Beparsha, which was is the Torah of Rabbi Avram Heschel Reisman, who was the father of Rabbi Tzvi Reisman of Los Angeles, I think we've mentioned before. So he makes a comment here that Rashi later on, in the later pasuk, where it talks about a b'charta b'chayim, so Rashi has a mashal which is a little bit challenging for the concept of free will. That the mashal that Rashi gives in the pasuk of b'charta b'chayim, so I'll read it to you. Rashi says, guy's saying, I'm telling you what to choose. I'm telling you to choose the portion of life. And what's it like? Like a man who says to his son, I want you to pick a good portion of my estate. And then you know what he does? He points to him, shows him exactly where the best part of his property is, and he stands in front of him and says, this is what you're going to choose. This is what you should pick. I want you to use your free will and voluntarily choose exactly what I'm telling you to look at. And he goes on to quote the pasuk, V'alzeh namar shamanas chelki v'chosi ata tumich garli. So essentially, that's the message here, that you're being directed what to pick. So is that really consistent with Bechira Chafshis, with an open choice? And especially with that mashal, is a message there that son could have picked any area he wants? Is it so likely that after the father, who he knows is looking out for his own interest, the father takes him to one specific section and says, this is what I'd like you to choose. How likely is it that the son's going to say, you know what, I think I want to go into the other side of the property? So this mashal doesn't seem to support so well the idea of Bechira Chafshis. So he suggests, a little bit similar to what we've seen before, but taking it a little bit further, that the idea is that, again, we are defined ultimately by the decisions that we consciously make. But we have a lot of aspects of our environment that help us, that show us what is possible. So we have been given a life where we see glimpses of what it's like to have a Torah-infused existence. There are aspects that we don't necessarily choose for ourselves that are placed in front of us. And our job is to reinforce those elements. Our job is to say, yeah, that looks good, and to do what we can to make sure that will continue to be a part of our existence, and that we'll do so because we have chosen it, because we have made it a part of our existence. So just like the Father says, I want you to pick this land, so God is saying, listen, here, I'm showing you what it's like to have a Torah, what it's like to have a spiritual existence, but it's only going to last within you if you do things to make it your own. So now that's what I'm instructing you to do, to take such steps and to make sure that continues to be the case. And then in that context, he says that's also the language of Hayom that always attracts attention. What exactly is Hayom here to say? Hayom means that every day you have a new Bechira Chafshis, that even though you may have made decisions in the past that have taken you down whatever path, but today is a new day, so you have Bechira again. So now you can make your choice, you can make your decision, and that's what we're telling you to do, to recognize how much is available for you and to take the steps necessary to continue that within yourself. Now here it's interesting again as far as the synergy to last week. So last week, if you recall, in Shvi of Kisavo, so we quoted a vort from the Shraga HaMeir, who was quoting from other Svarim, from a Chassidish Svarim, who said a certain pshat in the pasuk Ad Hayom Hazeh. So if you want some chazara, so he says on this pasuk, he said the same thing I said last week, the same thing I said in Shvi of Kisavo that we discussed there, he says relevant here as well, but he says a little bit more, and I'll just restate what we said then and show you how he applies it here. He says that the Gemara has a statement. We spoke a little bit about the whole history behind this Gemara. The Gemara in Maseches Brachos has a discussion about how one fights the Yetzer Hara, and that one should perhaps learn Torah as a remedy to fight the Yetzer Hara, and if that doesn't work, one should say Kriyat Shema, and if that doesn't work, one should remember the Yom HaMisa. Yazkir Yom HaMisa, should think of the day of death. And as explained from last week, that's generally taken in a depressing way. It's generally taken to mean you could die at any minute and you're not going to want to be judged in a negative state, so make sure that you clean up your act. Make sure that you put your affairs in order. also notes that it's also possible to see it in a very uplifting way, not in a depressing way, but make you realize that every day that you have is a day you weren't guaranteed to have. It could have been that the Yom HaMisa would have been yesterday, and that's not out of the realm of possibility. So the fact that you have today, and you have tomorrow, God willing, and every day after that, that's a tremendous gift. That's basically a windfall. That basically is a freebie. So you want to take that and do whatever you can with it. And take that and make it all that it can be. So he says those two perspectives. Here he says a little bit more. He says, he could say that that's what's going on in this pasuk. That Nasatim Funecha Hayom, Esa Chaim V'Esa Tov, V'Esa Maves, V'Esa Ra. So here it's a real, it's a Chassidish reading. It's very nice. Is that the idea Hayom, again, Yom is the Yom HaMisa that the Gemara refers to. So yes, I'm putting before you this concept of Yom HaMisa. But there's two ways that you can think about Yom HaMisa. You can think about it as a Mavis V'Esara. You can think about how it means death and a bad fate for anyone who's not in good shape. Or you can think about it in the positive way, that you have an extra day of life now, Esa Chayim V'Esa Tov, that you can do great things with this extra day that you were never guaranteed to have, and that should be a source of inspiration. So you should pick the Chayim. It says, take the two ways you could look at this concept of Hayom, the depressing way, the uplifting way. So take the uplifting way. Take the positive of inspiration that you can get from this moment and recognize what this day can give to you. That's a tremendous thing. So the pasuk continues to flesh this out a little bit more. It's just really comments on the same idea. What am I commanding? I'm commanding you to love God, the lachas bidrachov, to follow on his path, which Chazal tell us many times means chesed, halachta bidrachov. The Chafetz Chaim notes in his Sefer Avos Chesed that the commandment of, we call in Latin, those of us Latin speakers, we call imitatio dei, the idea of imitating a Kodesh Baruch Hu. So the Gemara tells us that that means stuck of the Chesed, that we should take care of people just like God takes care of people. And the Chafetz Chaim notes that this is a concept which in Sefer Dvarim alone appears 8 times. So here it is again, right, that you've been commanded to walk in God's path, v'lishmor mitzvosav, v'chukosav, mishpatav, to follow all the rules, v'chayisa, v'ravisa, v'racha sh'malakecha, v'aretz asher atav v'asham v'lirishtah, you should live, you should multiply, and God should bless you, and this land you're coming to, all extensions of these themes. V'yam yifne l'vavcha, v'loz tishma. But if your heart turns away and you're not going to listen, and you're going to get pulled away and you're going to end up worshipping other gods. So the beginning of this pasuk, yifne levavcha, so here, a shtickle synergy, the Gemara says in Maseches Sukkah, the Gemara comments on this pasuk, we're not up to it yet, it's quite a ways away, mem vav mit beis, but Ritz Hashem. Get there. Gemara says there, if you turn away, im tifne, then you're not going to hear. That one leads to the other. If you turn away, you won't hear. And the Torah Tmima understands that phrase to mean that if you let yourself give up on your learning, it's a good Musar Shmuz for the Bnei Yeshiva, that if you don't continue to review and to make it a part of your awareness, so then it won't be heard. Then the message is not going to get through. That you have to keep intensifying it and keep reviewing it. And this is what's suggested by the Gemara. The Gemara there, over there in Sukkah, also quotes a pasuk from Kisavo, where there's a similar theme, and the Gemara suggests that learning builds on itself, and that the way you get deeper insight and a permanent message and an actual connection with the theme is by seeing it again and again and making sure to hold on to it. And the Gemara has the comparison that it's not like the kli bus of Adam, you have a human utensil. So the more you put in it, the less extra you can put in it. The more it's full, the more it doesn't have room for anything else. But learning is not that way. The more you learn, the more you'll be able to learn more, the more that can be built on and reinforced. And the less you learn, the less you're going to be able to hold on to and to internalize. And that's one of the messages here as well. And the pasuk continues. Pasuk Yudches, Yigaditi lachem hayom ki avod tovedun v'lo sarichun yom maladam asher ata over as yardim lavo shem l'rishta. So that's the negative. That's what's going to happen if you continue with idolatry. It's not going to be good for you. But says next pasuk, Haidosi lachem hayom asa shamayim v'asa aretz hachayim v'hamaves nosati l'fanecha. So I call upon the heaven and the earth that they should come and give testimony that I am placing in front of you a choice. There's a chayim v'amaves, habracha v'hakloa. And what's the advice? Here it is, that phrase. Uvacharta b'chayim. You should pick the path of life. V'man tichya ata v'zarecha. So that you should live and your children as well. So here, this pasuk is very interesting. It seems to be repeating the same themes, but it has a lot of ideas to it. First of all, the Bacharta B'chayim. So here, what does Chayim mean? On the one hand, the straight flow of the pasuk is it means everything we've been talking about. It means that you should take the uplifting path of Torah and mitzvot, but there's a much more seemingly mundane interpretation that the Yerushalmi has in the beginning of Maseches Peah, and also in the first parak of Kedushin, that what does Chayim mean? And there are statements in the Bavli like this also from other psukim, that it refers to umnus, it refers to learning a craft, that you should learn a profession so that you're able to make money and you're able to live and to survive. And here the Yerushalmi has the phrase, the Bavli has parallel concepts, not necessarily connected to this pasuk, but that one has to teach his child, one has to teach his son a profession so that he'll be able to make a living. So there's one message here that you have to learn a craft so that you can support yourself. It's also perhaps significant that the word is ubacharta. So if that's the context, the Sefer Magadim Chadashim is a contemporary Sefer on many things. So he notes is the message that you get to pick, that it's really up to you what parnasa you're going to pursue. So we do find perhaps a few other implications that God picks the professions that people will go into. So he suggests really a combination of both, that God gives you your natural tendencies, which include that you're drawn to a certain job, a certain skill, a certain type of pursuit. And then because of that, you choose that when you need to make a living, you're going to go out and decide to try to do that because you feel this is something that interests you. And then HaKadosh Baruch Hu, of course, decides just how successful you'll be with that and how much parnasa is going to accrue to you because of that. But the path, the hishtadlus that is required to do that is that you find something that you feel you have a connection to, you have an attraction to, and that you make that a part of your life, and you have that as something that will support you. Now, of course, this sounds like it's a little bit touching upon hashkafically controversial territory, the whole question of the delicate balance that exists between Torah and other pursuits, and the necessity of other pursuits. And of course, there's a lot to say about this, but it's interesting to note that the Rashi of Karen B'Avner, Goldwicht, notes that, okay, but it seems like the flow of the psukim was going in a different direction, talking about choose the spirituality and the whole mitzvah of tshuva, which appears right before this in Parshas Nitzavim. So really is the whole message, oh, by the way, make sure to get a good job so you'll have a nice living, doesn't seem to follow the flow. So he suggests that, look, it's a mitzvah of life that we need to be able to support ourselves. That's the klala of Adam HaRishon, that b'zeis apacha tocha lechem. But we should also make sure that we do so in a context that allows for our spirituality to continue, that we factor in the need that we're also learning and that we are acting in all kinds of situations in ways that we are proud of. And therefore, it's all one message, that we should choose the path of spiritual life, and yes, the path of physical life. That's a necessary vehicle for that, but the choices that we make should also reflect the need to maximize the spirituality. And the Sefer Charedim is a fascinating idea. Sefer Charedim in Chelek Aleph and Mitzvah Chav, he quotes from Rabbeinu Yonah that this idea, Bacharta Bachayim, that you fulfill this as a din when you avoid situations of Safek Isser. When clearly something is definitely asur, so for sure you have to avoid that. But when there's a situation where you're not sure, it's a suffix, so then you fulfill the mitzvah of the heart of Achayim when you avoid that. And he quotes also from the Ran, it's true spiritually and it's true physically. So if you avoid dangerous situations, you make sure to always choose the safest path. So that is also a fulfillment of Uvachart Abachayim, which again synergizes, as we spoke about, I think 2 weeks ago, about the need to fulfill the idea of Nishmartam, the idea of what exactly the message of the Torah is, of protecting your life if we believe everything is ultimately up to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So why is it so important that you not do dangerous things? And we noted that it's important on its own level that, yes, HaKadosh Baruch Hu decides what's going to happen, but it's also crucial that we show that we cherish and that we value our lives, and therefore we don't do things that are dangerous, even though it's ultimately up to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And that this pasuk is saying that also, Bachar to Bachayim, says the Ran, that you should choose paths that are secure and that are safe, that are not dangerous, because that's also part of the message of this pasuk. So it's interesting to consider then the two together. If that's the idea that we have regarding physical life, so to what extent is it the same idea when it comes to spiritual life? This idea of staying away from a suffix isser. So there's a nice discussion about this in the Sefer Chavetzelis HaSharon HaTorah on this pasuk, where he discusses that question when we talk about suffix d'oraisa l'chumra, right? So it's a matter of Torah law, and we're not sure what the story is, if it's mutter or asr, so then we assume it's asr or machmir. If it's a mitzvah question, we're not sure if we're chayiv or not, we assume we're chayiv. When it comes to Torah law, so we are machmir. So you might be familiar that it's a machlokas rishonim, whether that is a din d'oraisa itself or a din d'rabbanan. Does the Torah require us also to worry about sveikos, or is that itself a din d'rabbanan? So the suggestion he has here is that even if it's a din min haTorah, maybe it's a different din min haTorah. So, for example, when it comes to, let's say, chazer, so the Torah says, don't eat chazer. Don't eat a behemoth tamei, more specifically. So that means that the isser of eating a behemoth tamei, that happens if one would choose to eat something that he knows is such a object, is actually chazer. But if somebody doesn't know, if it's a suffix, so then he's also obligated min haTorah to put it away, to not eat it. That's actually a little confusing, to put it aside, to not eat it. And maybe that's not because of the din of chazer, maybe it's because of this din, maybe it's because of the chayt v'chayim, a separate concept that one has to choose the safer path, both physically and spiritually. And if that's the case, then it's more comparable to what we talked about in terms of v'nishmartem, that it's not so much that we're afraid that you're actively going to connect with an isser here. That maybe only really applies to vaday situations. But the issue is that it's an attitude that's disrespectful to your spiritual life, that if you're not concerned, if you're not going to show that this is something that you value and that you're going to be careful even when you're not 100% sure of what the situation is, so that's a bad message. So he has a nice essay there, the Chavetzelis HaSharon, discussing all these questions. If one does, let's say, a suffix isser, so to what extent is he actually violating that specific isser that it's connected to? Or should we say, no, that isser you didn't violate, but you violated something else. You violated this idea of being careless with your spiritual existence, and that's a different consideration, and that has its own set of perspectives. Hi.
It's kind of connected with kind of a side thing, but just in terms of like when a person has... like they have a sort of suffix, or a suffix this or that comes up, where they think like something's not okay. Like they don't really know the halacha. They feel like maybe it is okay, but they're not sure. It might be. So is this connected here? Is this like, so when we have those situations, we should not.
So in general, the discussion of what is called a suffix lahalacha is a major topic. When you read God Will Moshe Shmaisa again, so you'll see that this is a theme. We talk about a suffix. What is a suffix? It's a suffix because we don't know the reality. We don't know what the subject is. A suffix is because it's a matter of machlokas. We don't know how to paskin. A suffix is just because we happen not to be educated enough. Why are all these things called sveikas or not? There's all kinds of different degrees and all kinds of different questions as to what counts as an actual suffix. And usually we say that if it's possible for you to find out, then that's not considered to be a suffix. That if you could just put in a little more effort and ascertain what it is. So there's all kinds of nuances in this discussion, and that's something we can't do full justice to in this time. But perhaps this pasuk gives us a little bit of a starting point. The pasuk says that, listen, this is not something to take lightly, that if there is a real possibility that there's something here, or if there's a lack of full effort on your part to try to figure out what's going on, so then that's going to violate the spirit of this pasuk. This pasuk says, "Ubachart v'chaim." Its overall message is that both in the physical realm and in the spiritual realm, you should show that you're concerned about these things. You should show that you're careful with your life, and you should show that you're careful with your spiritual existence, and that should reflect itself in the decisions that you make, that you don't do something that's physically dangerous, and you don't take steps that are spiritually questionable, even if it's not 100% clear, and if it's possible for you to minimize or mitigate the damage, the danger, so then you'll do that. That's, again, perhaps the directive of V'charta B'chayim. It's a very interesting idea that it should be connected to this pasuk, as opposed to simply a reality that's inherent in every individual iser. So, what about the rest of the pasuk? The idea of v'man tichya, the idea that you should live. So we just said that, right? That's already been the theme here. So why does that need to be repeated, v'man tichya? So perhaps the focus is atav v'zarecha, that it has to do with your children also. And Rav Moshe Feinstein has a comment here. You can find, it's interesting. This comment is in a number of places because you can find it in the Darash Moshe of Rav Moshe Feinstein, and a number of other svarim also point you there, and I've definitely seen this before. This is a theme that Rav Moshe has throughout, and I think I've seen similar ideas quoted in the Rav Moshe Feinstein biography and the Art Scroll book. This is one of his meta ideas that he writes. This part is not in the Darsh Moshe, but I think this is what I remember from the biography, and it's come up in other contexts also. He said that we ruin our children by saying "Eshver Tzayin Yid," right? The expression people say that it's hard to be a Jew, so that has a bad effect on your children. That when children hear the parents, even if the parents are completely observant and they follow every halacha, but they hear them constantly complaining about it, they hear them saying that it's difficult to live a life as a Jew. So then, ultimately, that has an effect on the children. The children absorb that, and it becomes less significant that they actually fulfill the mitzvah, so it becomes more significant that they considered it to be a miserable life. And the message should be that we should convey to our children that it's beautiful and wonderful to be a Jew, and that that's what they should be hearing from us. So he suggests here in this pasuk that that's what it means, you and your zarecha, you and your children, that not only should you hope that you will yourself follow all the Dinei HaTorah, but that you should do so in a way that overflows positively. You should do so in a way that your children pick up on and they see how pleasant it is for you and how meaningful it is to you. And that's a condition in the pasuk also, that it should be performed in such a way that you have an effect. I saw also an interesting vort in the Sefer of Yir Yaakov, who notes as a Beis Halevi, a little bit of Jewish, that when Avram sends Eliezer to get a shidduch for Yitzchak, so he refers to him as my son Yitzchak. And Eliezer just refers to him as the son of Avram. So the Beis Halevi says that sometimes when people are looking for shidduchim, so they're interested, they want it to be the son of a Talmud Chacham, they want the important family of stature, but they don't want the son himself to be a Talmud Chacham, because they want him to be able to make a living. They want him to be able to have a comfortable life. So they're happy that the father is a Talmud Chacham, but they hope that the son is going to be somebody very wealthy instead. So Eliezer thought, okay, I shouldn't share things. I'll mention he's Avram's son, but I don't have to mention that Yitzchak himself is also the same type. And Avram understood, no, that we should take pride in this lifestyle. This is what it's about. And therefore should emphasize Yitzchak also is not just Avram's son, he's also a Talmud Chacham. So in the Sefer of Yir Yaakov, he said maybe that's also the context here, that we shouldn't just want for our children that, oh, they should come from a chashuva family, but whatever it is they do is less significant. No, that they should also be adopting that themselves, and therefore the pasuk makes sure to include that the children are doing it also. Okay, an interesting idea. The Yerushalmi in Kiddushin that we mentioned before also learns from this pasuk, from the end of this pasuk, an idea which again appears in the Bavli, but connects it to this pasuk, that you have to teach your child to swim, and that's really symbolic of a lot of things, that you have to teach your child life survival skills. So whatever it takes to make sure they know what to do to be able to deal with danger, so that's a part of what has to be conveyed, that's also a part of this theme of showing respect and consideration about your life and about both the physical and spiritual aspects. Okay, so then the Aliyah concludes, Aliyava is Hashem Elokecha l'shmoa b'kolo u'ledov kavo, ki hu chayecha v'orechemecha l'shevas ha'adam asher nishba Hashem l'avisecha l'avram l'yitzchu Yaakov l'seis lehem. So l'dov kavo, here the Gemara in Sota comments that you have to cleave to God. So how do you cleave to God? He doesn't have a physical body that you can cleave to. Gemara actually emphasizes an Esh Ochla, that is a burning fire, so it's going to be very difficult for that reason, which is interesting why the Gemara focuses on that, simply that on the reality that we don't have a physical body to hold on to. But the Gemara in Supas and Daf Kufir Aleph and the Rambam and Sefer HaMitzvos and others all understand this to mean that one should seek out Talmidei Chachamim, and one should try to be close to Talmidei Chachamim in every way that they can, and that is going to reflect this idea Uladav Kavo, and this idea of Kihu Chayecha V'Arech Amecha, that the Torah is a source of the length of your life. So the Gemara, the end of Brachas and Daf Nun Hei, the Gemara has a statement that a couple things have a negative effect Chalila on your longevity, don't lead to a longer life. And one of them is somebody who's asked to read the Torah, asked to get an Aliyah, and he doesn't do it. So what's so terrible about that? Okay, not everybody wants an Aliyah. Why is that so bad to turn it down? So the Torah to me explains that it's not about the Aliyah. It's that back in those days, so to get an Aliyah means you had to read yourself. You had to be the one to actually learn. And why would you turn it down? You turn it down because you're not prepared, because you're not holding in the topic. So it's not about turning down the Aliyah, and maybe there are other reasons why you turn it down, which this wouldn't apply to, but it reflects this fact that you didn't invest enough time to be familiar with it. That's the concern the Gemara is talking about. So he doesn't say this idea, but it's seen elsewhere that they connect this to the phrase the Gemara has in the beginning of Brachos, in the first parak on Daf Ches, that the Gemara talks about the very challenging mitzvah d'Rabbanan of Shnai Mikra V'Yecha Targum. They have to go over the Parsha every week. And the Gemara has the statement there that it's called HaMashlim Posh Yosef HaMatzibor Shnai Mikra V'Yecha Targum. Whoever does this, Marichim Lo Yomav U'Shnosav. So he's given extra years and days. He's given a long life. So some explain that, yeah, you can understand, if you're going to do Shnai Mikra every week, you need a longer life. It takes a lot of time. It takes a whole lot of time. But others explain, based on this Gemara, in a very similar way, that some understand the takana of Shnai Mikra V'Yecha Targum was there so that you should be ready to learn, that you could get called at any minute to read the Torah, and we all know that if you just go over the Parsha twice with Targum, it'll be ready to lay like that. So, therefore, this idea was to help you prepare for that. It's a whole discussion, because then the question comes up, can you fulfill Shnai Mikra with reading along with the laning? So, according to this idea, really not, because it would all have to be before the laning. So, some suggest that that's Peshat on this Gemara about Marichimo, that if you turn down an Aliyah, so it's going to shorten your life, God forbid, that's because you're not prepared. So the other side of it is, but if you do Shnai Mikra, so you are prepared, so then Marichimo Yoram Shnosav, so then you'll have a counteracting force to that, and things should go better. Jebediah?
According to that day, so since nowadays we don't read from the Torah, all of us, so would they say that Shnai Mikra doesn't apply to Shnai Mikra?
Yes, that would be a good kula, but no one says that. But nice try. You know what they say? There's a Rav Yah, right? So yesterday everyone was looking for the Rav Yah, so you're definitely going to look for this one. Rav Yah also says that basically the whole point of Shnai Mikra V'Yecha Targum is to be the home game. That is, what happens if somebody can't make it to shul? So if you can't make it to shul, you're going to miss Kriyas HaTorah. So this is meant to be the home game, that you know, the board game that you have at home, whatever you call it, so that because you have to recreate the experience. So this is to be a makeshift leaning. And therefore, Shnai Mikra, so you have two times, one connected to Baal Kore, and one connected to Ola, and one connected to Meturgaman, that's the Targum. It's all meant to imitate the Kriyas HaTorah, so it's specifically there for one who doesn't hear Kriyas HaTorah in shul. So that theoretically could have been a limud zchus, but it's not quoted in Shulchan Aruch, it's not quoted by the later poskim. Rav Kook has a whole essay explaining why it's not true. It can't be that that's what it's about. But if you're looking for a limud zchus, it's a start.
Then On that note, though, so let's say first sin isn't just going to be with minion on Shabbos. So is there like a sort of, is it best for a person to, they don't have a sacred Torah, but they have a chumash, should they go through the parsha with the language?
Oh, so some have suggested that, you know, that much you can get from the Rav Yoh. The Rav Yoh shouldn't excuse you from doing Shnei Mikra when you do go to shul, but maybe the other half of it is true. That at least, you know, if you're not able to go to shul, at least do this to kind of replace it. Although you skip to Shnei Mikra anyway, so I mean, I guess the idea would be to do it then at the same time when the rest of the Tibur is laying, which to support the Rav Yoh, the language of the Gemara is Lo'olam Yashon Parashiyosu of Ima Tzibur, at the same time as the Tzibur. We understand, the Rishonim understand that generally to mean that it has to be done the same week as when that Parsha is being laid, and Poskim are actually quite machmir about that, which is very interesting. But again, if you want to be Malam Yitzchus, so then there is that view, and the Rishonim can't say that the Poskim at all adopt it, but and when you're grasping at straws, okay. So there's that. All right, so we still have to get in the Shvi Vayelech. Let's quickly take a look at that. A couple of important ideas that are commented upon here also. That here, so Vayelech ends with the Sefer Torah that Moshe wrote. It says, Vayitzav Moshe Salaviyam Nosi Aron Bris Hashem Lemor. So Moshe commands Leviyam who are carrying the Aron. And what does it say to them? This is a famous pasuk. Lakoach a sefer atayra hazeh v'samtem asol mitzad arun bris Hashem lokechem v'haya sham b'cholei. Take the sefer Torah and put it in the arun of the covenant of Hashem, and it'll be there as an aid. So here I'll make an embarrassing confession. So in my shul, Baruch Hashem, sefer Torah are mostly pretty good. It doesn't happen so often that there's a problem that we have to put away a sefer Torah. But remember, the first time it happened in a long time happened on this pasuk. That this pasuk, there was a mistake, and so it's doubly awkward because of course the pasuk is saying take the sefer Torah, so lakoch a sefer Torah hazeh and put it in the aron. So that was what they actually had to do, take the sefer Torah and put it back in the aron. So it's kind of normally you don't want to fulfill the pasuk so literally, so that's awkward. But there's an extra level of awkwardness here, because maybe this is a topic maybe we can address a little bit in the coming weeks. We won't have time to talk about it today, but the Gemara, it's a Simchas Torah topic, and the Gemara in Menachos and in Bava Basra, the Gemara discusses the question of whether the last 8 psukim of the Torah were written by Moshe Rabbeinu or not. So the question is, why all of a sudden are we wondering? Because, you know, most, let's say, an autobiography, which is written by the person who it's about, normally they don't have chapters like, so then I got sick and I died and it was awful. Anyway, so a few weeks later, this happened, you know, they don't keep going after the main character dies. So here, the Torah is not an autobiography, but it was written down by Moshe, and it talks about his life. So it's a little strange that it says Moshe dies and it keeps going for 8 more psukim. So the Gemara asks, so what's pshat in those 8 psukim? So the Gemara has 2 possibilities. Either that Yoshua actually wrote those last 8 psukim, or that Moshe wrote them in a different way, which is a little bit outside our scope right now to discuss. So here the Gemara quotes this pasuk to say that how could it be? How could it be that those last 8 psukim were not written yet? Because here the pasuk says, "Lakoach a sefer Torah hazeh." He says, "Take the sefer Torah." So Gemara asks, "Could it be that this is called the sefer Torah without those psukim?" The Gemara asks, "Could it be that sefer Torah chaser al sachas? It's missing one letter. It's going to be called the sefer Torah. It can't be." So that's a whole different discussion about the last 8 psukim. But it made it doubly awkward that there should be a problem with the pasuk, because first of all, there's a pasuk which literally says, "Take the sefer Torah and put it in the aron." But also, it's awkward because this is the pasuk that the Gemara quotes to make the point that you can't have a sefer Torah that's missing anything. You can't have a sefer Torah that has any kind of problems with it. So it's a double awkwardness to have mistakes. I'd recommend, if you're going to have mistakes in your sefer Torah, have them in any other pasuk other than this one. But in any event, so this is a important, so often quoted pasuk. There's a lot to say about it. Maybe we'll have time before Simchas Torah to talk about the last day of psukim and the relevance. But the Gemara in Gittin has a major discussion based on this pasuk, where the Gemara wants to know how was the Torah given. And some of the Farshim understand it means how was it given to Moshe Rabbeinu. that when Moshe received the Torah from God, not necessarily how did Moshe give it to the Jews, but how did God give it to Moshe? So do we say Torah Megillah Megillah Nitna, or do we say Torah Chasuma Nitna? Meaning that was the Torah, we know the Torah was given orally to Moshe earlier, but what about the written form of the Torah? Was it written each stage along the way? So Megillah Megillah Nitna, so there were smaller versions of the Torah that later on were merged to create the whole Torah? Or is it that the Torah in its written form was given all at once? So do we say Torah Chasuma Nitna, or do we say that it was given in smaller portions and then put together? And the Gemara suggests that this pasuk makes it sound like it was all given as one, although the Gemara says it still could be consistent with the idea of Megillah Megillah Nitna, that later on they were all tied together, and that's the point. So what do you do with this Sefer Torah? So this Sefer Torah apparently was not for the purposes of learning, as the Znaim Torah points out, if it was put in the Aron, so that it's kept in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, wasn't exactly accessible. This isn't exactly your free lending library. So it wasn't really there for learning purposes. So he writes that it was there for reference purposes, that it was there to be the master text, so that if there was ever any suffix about what the Torah really said, if there was ever any corruption in the text, so that this should be there to establish the truth. And he says, there's Nayim LaTorah, that's the flow into the next pasuk. Next pasuk says, Ki anochi adaiti es meryecha es arpecha akasha hein badenu chayim ochem hayom mamrim hayisim Hashem v'af k'achrei mosik. So Moshe is saying now things get very negative. He says, I know you guys. I know that you can be rebellious. I know that you're going to take a negative path. So there's Nayim LaTorah comments that this idea of being rebellious, so that also extend sometimes to even not just abandoning the Torah, but to hijacking the Torah and trying to change it for your own purposes and trying to misrepresent what it actually says. So with that context, it's especially important to keep this master text safe, so that there should be a proof, there should be an edus. That's what the pasuk is talking about. V'haya sham b'chol eid. It should be a testimony of what the Torah actually says, and it shouldn't be allowed that it should be able to be converted to anything else. This pasuk is also the source of a din. The Rambam in Hilchos Sefer Torah, in Perek Yud Halacha Yud, the Rambam has a whole arichas about how careful we have to be with a Sefer Torah, and it's possible. This is sometimes I give the shir before Simchas Torah also, just to make people realize how careful they should be on Simchas Torah. That we have a minig that if Chalila Sefer Torah should fall, so we have to fast. That's a whole discussion. But some suggest that it's because we have such a kpeid about Kavod Sefer Torah, that even if we let the Sefer Torah fall b'shogeg, even though it shouldn't normally need any kind of a consequence when something happens b'shogeg, that we're so machmir that we treat it like a mezid and we require an act of tshuva to fix it. And it's all attached to this Rambam and Yod Yod in Hilchos Sefer Torah, where he really emphasizes just how careful one has to be. So part of what he says about how careful one has to be is you have to have a good place for it. You have to have a careful place where to put it. And that's the Aron, and it leads to a whole discussion in Poskim about the rules of that. The Gra in Yerideya in Reish Pei Beis, so he says the Makar of the Rambam, that you need a special place for the Sefer Torah, is from this Pasuk. This Pasuk says that the Sefer Torah should be placed in the Aron together with the Luchos, so that is a Makar for this din, that it has to be a Sefer Torah, has to have a special place. And the Chavetz Chaim Sharon has got a nice essay about this also. There's a lot of details one could ask about. So can you put a Pasul Sefer Torah in the Aron? Can you put anything else in the Aron? So that's the whole discussion. Some say, well, of course you can. There's a Raya Brewer that you can, because the first set of Luchos were also in the Aron, right? The Shivrei Luchos, which were not usable anymore, are kept in the Aron. So why can't the Pasul Sefer Torah also be kept in the Aron? So some say that no, the Behuda doesn't show about this, and some say no, that the Aron was always set up to contain the Shivrei Luchos, so it was designated like that. Maybe our Aron Kodesh is only designated for Kosher Sefer Torah, and you shouldn't put a Pasul Sefer Torah in there. So that's a whole back and forth. Is a Tanai help? Is a condition help? So whatever it is, it's from this pasuk. And they also note, I think like yesterday, if you don't mind, the same situation, maybe we'll daven minchah in here because we're running over time, but just another minute. So there's a whole discussion, there's a din of Lo'ig LaRush, which has a lot of relevance here also, that the Gemara says one shouldn't do mitzvos in a cemetery, because It creates, it's like you're mocking the dead who can't do mitzvahs anymore. So that's a bad attitude to do. So the Gemara in Brachos talks about this, third paragraph of Brachos. The Gemara says a person shouldn't walk around in a cemetery with his tzitzis out and the like, and a sefer Torah b'zro. He shouldn't have a sefer Torah on his arm. So the Tosfos says sefer Torah on his arm. What does that mean? It's not a mitzvah. It means because he's learning. So he has a sefer Torah on his arm to learn. He shouldn't be learning in a cemetery. He shouldn't have your tzitzis out in the cemetery, etc. But the Rambam just has it straight. He shouldn't have the sefer Torah in the cemetery. So some explain that it's really a different din. And indeed, the Rambam quotes that Hilchos Sefer Torah, that it's about the covet of the sefer Torah, that you shouldn't bring a sefer Torah in the cemetery because of the sefer Torah. It's not very respectful. And you see here that he has a kpeda about the place. So this is also part of it. I think Rabbi Parnas used to be a Rebbe here many years ago. There's an article about this in one of the Sfarim that the Yeshiva published a number of years ago, where I think he suggests that they're all connected, that because it's prohibited to learn in a cemetery, because it's disrespectful to the dead, so it's mocking the dead, so since you can't learn, so you don't really have a use for a Sefer Torah in a cemetery. So if you don't have use for a Sefer Torah, so it's disrespectful to bring the Sefer Torah to a place where it doesn't have a use, and therefore it ends up going in both directions. It's not nice to the deceased, and it's not nice to the Sefer Torah, so it appears in Hilchos Sefer Torah as well. And just to say one more thought, that here this idea, this very negative sounding idea, that Moshe is saying to the Jews, I know what you're like, I know how you're going to end up doing a lot of bad things in the future, unfortunately. So Rav Shamshon Afal Hirsch has a whole essay about this in his Sefer, a whole comment about this, where he notes that this is another proof of the divinity of the Torah. Because just like the Gemara says about the non-kosher animals, and the Torah makes statements about what exists. So if a human being was writing the Torah, so you wouldn't write something that you know might be contradicted. So similarly, Rav Hirsch says that if the Torah was not written by God, so who would ever set up a system like this? Moshe says, okay, here are the rules. I know that they're not what you want to do, and I know that you're not likely to follow them, and I know that it's going to take centuries before this settles in, and for a long time you're not going to follow them, and here you go. So who's going to set up such a system? So the fact that it was necessary to have that reality means the Torah must be divine and must come from God, and this isn't something any human being would set up. And despite the fact that it creates challenges, nonetheless, it is what it is. But that really can then be brought together with a message of, again, the synergy of the end of Nitzavim, together with the end of Vayelech, that yes, it's very challenging, but u'b'charta b'chaim, that your job is to take all of the aspects that we're exposed to and make it their own, make it our own, and make that part of our personality, do everything that we can to strengthen that koach habechira, and then we won't have to worry about all of the negative implications, and we can choose the positive and make that our continuing reality. It's again a very appropriate message. We approach Rosh Hashanah next week, so we will stop here and we'll daven, and hopefully we'll be able to keep this in mind. Who would like to daven for us and volunteers?